Timothy Leary lives. No, 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 he's outside looking in. Timothy Leary lives. No, 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 no.
Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Free Culture Radio. I'm Doug McVeigh. Free Culture Radio is an examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the ineluctable, indelible, and indispensable influence of drugs on society. Free Culture Radio neither promotes the use of any drugs nor condemns people for being involved in drugs. To the extent that drug use presents problems for individuals or for society, those problems are made worse and more intractable when people who use drugs are treated as others and ignored, stigmatized, and even brutalized. The Institute for Social Research at the University of Michigan and the National Institute on Drug Abuse has just released the results of the 2019 Monitoring the Future survey. Every year, thousands of 8th, 10th, and 12th grade students around the U.S. are surveyed about their use of alcohol, nicotine products, and other drugs. You can find the results of this survey and all of their survey results dating back decades at monitoringthefuture.org. For now, with this year's results, here's Dr. Nora Volkow, director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse.
Marijuana use in the United States among teenagers is the most frequently illicit substance of use. And if you look at the numbers, for example, of the past year of marijuana use, close to 36% of 12th graders have reported having used it in the past year. There are some very worrisome trends where we have seen significant increases in daily use of marijuana, both among 8th and 10th graders from last year to this year. And this is very worrisome because we know that the younger you initiate the use of a substance, including marijuana, the greater the risk that you will become addicted to it. If you look at the changes in the rate of kids that are vaping marijuana, we've seen almost a doubling in the number of teenagers that are vaping marijuana on the past year and over 2 years. And we've also seen almost a doubling of vaping in the past month. And this increase in past month vaping of marijuana is the second highest increase in a trend that we've seen since the inception of the Monitoring the Future. The trends on increases on vaping of nicotine continue, and they are very, very significant. For example, if you go to the indicator of past month vaping among teenagers, 12th graders, 25% of them has vaped nicotine in the past month. Among 10th graders, 20% of them have vaped on the past month. Also, the rate of vaping nicotine daily is very high, and we are seeing that among 12th graders, the rate is 12% of them are vaping nicotine daily, which is our frequency rate associated with a very, very high risk of becoming addicted to nicotine. The very high rate of vaping of nicotine that we're observing among high school students is very worrisome because we have done extraordinary progress as it relates to decreasing consumption of tobacco among 12th graders, 8th graders, 10th graders. We are at the lowest rates that we've ever had since the inception of the Monitoring the Future. So we have 2.4% of 12th graders, for example, reporting that they are using tobacco products daily, cigarettes in particular, whereas we're seeing 12% of them vaping nicotine on a daily basis. This is of great concern. And the other aspect of it when you are dealing with nicotine through vaping is that you are delivering the nicotine in a very efficient way, but also at very high content. And we're also seeing that pattern where teenagers are escalating much faster than what happens when you're smoking cigarettes. The good news in terms of drug use is that basically, except for vaping, the drug use has been going down and some of the lowest levels that we've seen. And this is actually pertinent to opioids because we're seeing an opioid crisis across the country, and yet the prevalence of opioid use among teenagers is very low. For example, as it relates to prescription opioids, the most frequent used prescription opioid is Vicodin among teenagers, and it has gone down from 10.5 to 1%, a dramatic reduction. Similarly, the use of heroin among 12 graders is at 0.4%. So even though we're seeing this high rate of use of these substances in adults, we fortunately are not seeing it in adolescents. The news with alcohol are also very, very good. They are going down in basically all of the indicators, and certainly the most concerning was the use of binge drinking, which is significantly down, regular drinking, which is significantly down. And this is actually seen across 8th, 10th, and 12th graders. So they are good news as it relates to many drugs, but very worrisome news as it relates to the use of vaping devices for nicotine and vaping devices for cannabis. And we need to understand if this trend continues, because if it does, then that is something that we need to pay attention to intervene to prevent it from happening.
That was Nora Volkow, MD, director of NIDA, with some of the results from this year's Monitoring the Future survey of 8th, 10th, and 12th grade students in the U.S. You're listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. For this next segment, let's go back to 1971 at the White House.
Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to summarize for you the meeting that I have just had with the bipartisan leaders, which began at 8 o'clock and was completed 2 hours later. I began the meeting by making this statement, which I think needs to be made to the nation. America's public enemy number one in the United States is drug abuse. In order to fight and defeat this enemy, it is necessary to wage a new all-out offensive. I have asked the Congress to provide the legislative authority and the funds to fuel this kind of an offensive. This will be a worldwide offensive dealing with the problems of sources of supply as well as Americans who may be stationed abroad, wherever they are in the world. It will be government-wide, pulling together the 9 different fragmented areas within the government in which this problem is now being handled. And it will be nationwide in terms of a new educational program that we trust will result as from the discussions that we have had. With regard to this offensive, it is necessary first to have a new organization. And the new organization will be within the White House. Dr. Jaffe, who will be one of the briefers here today, will be the man directly responsible. He will report directly to me. And he will have the responsibility to take all of the government agencies, 9, that deal with the problems of rehabilitation, in which his primary responsibilities will be research and education, and see that they work not at cross purposes, but work together in dealing with the problem. If we're going to have a successful offensive, we need more money. Consequently, I'm asking the Congress for $155 million in new funds, which will bring the total amount this year in the budget for drug abuse, both in enforcement and treatment, to over $350 million. As far as the new money is concerned, incidentally, I have made it clear to the leaders that if this is not enough, if more can be used, if Dr. Jaffe, after studying this problem, finds that we can use more, more will be provided. In order to defeat this enemy, which is causing such great concern, and correctly so to so many American families, money will be provided to the extent that it is necessary and to the extent that it will be useful. And finally, in order for this program to be effective, it is necessary that it be conducted on a basis in which the American people all join in it. That's why the meeting was bipartisan. Bipartisan because we needed the support of the Congress, but bipartisan because we needed the leadership of members of the Congress in this field. Fundamentally, it is essential for the American people to be alerted to this danger, to recognize that it is a danger that will not pass with the passing of the war in Vietnam, which has brought to our attention the fact that a number of young Americans have become addicts as they serve abroad, whether in Vietnam or Europe or other places. Because the problem existed before we became involved in Vietnam, it will continue to exist afterwards And that is why this offensive deals with the problem there in Europe, but will then go on to deal with the problem throughout America. One final word with regard to presidential responsibility in this respect. I very much hesitate always to bring some new responsibility into the White House, because there are so many here, and I believe in delegating those responsibilities to the departments. But I consider this problem so urgent. I also found that it was scattered so much throughout the government, with so much conflict, without coordination, that it had to be brought into the White House, and consequently, I have brought Dr. Jaffe into the White House, directly reporting to me, so that we have not only the responsibility, but the authority to see that we wage this offensive effectively and in a coordinated way.
That was Richard Nixon opening up a news conference in April 1971. The audio comes to us courtesy of the Nixon Library. Presidents love drugs. It gives them an opportunity to act tough and yet show a compassionate side while bloviating. It's really nothing but baloney. But speaking of baloney, this next clip first aired back in 1986. Speak to me, Nancy!
Thank you. As a mother, I've always thought of September as a special month, a time when we bundled our children off to school, to the warmth of an environment in which they could fulfill the promise and hope in those restless minds. But so much has happened over these last years, so much to shake the foundations of all that we know and all that we believe in. Today, there's a drug and alcohol abuse epidemic in this country, and no one is safe from it. Not you, not me, and certainly not our children, because this epidemic has their names written on it. Many of you may be thinking, well, drugs don't concern me, but it does concern you. It concerns us all because of the way it tears at our lives and because it's aimed at destroying the brightness and life of the sons and daughters of the United States. For 5 years, I've been traveling across the country, learning and listening. And one of the most hopeful signs I've seen is the building of an essential new awareness of how terrible and threatening drug abuse is to our society. This was one of the main purposes when I started, so of course it makes me happy that that's been accomplished. But each time I meet with someone new or receive another letter from a troubled person on drugs, I yearn to find a way to help share the message that cries out from them. As a parent, I'm especially concerned about what drugs are doing to young mothers and their newborn children. Listen to a news account from a hospital in Florida of a child born to a mother with a cocaine habit. Nearby, a baby named Paul lies motionless in an incubator, feeding tubes riddling his tiny body. He needs a respirator to breathe and a daily spinal tap to relieve fluid buildup on his brain. Only 1 month old, he's already suffered 2 strokes. Now you can see why drug abuse concerns every one of us, all the American family. Drugs steal away so much. They take and take until finally, every time a drug goes into a child, something else is forced out, like love and hope and trust and confidence. Drugs take away the dream from every child's heart and replace it with a nightmare. And it's time we in America stand up and replace those dreams. Each of us has to put our principles and consciences on the line, whether in social settings or in the workplace, to set forth solid standards and stick to them. No moral middle ground. Indifference is not an option. We want you to help us create an outspoken intolerance for drug use. For the sake of our children, I implore each of you to be unyielding and inflexible in your opposition to drugs. Our young people are helping us lead the way. Not long ago in Oakland, California, I was asked by a group of children what to do if they were offered drugs. And I answered, just say no. Soon after that, those children in Oakland formed a Just Say No club. And now there are over 10,000 such clubs all over the country. Well, their participation and their courage in saying no needs our encouragement. We can help by using every opportunity to force the issue of not using drugs to the point of making others uncomfortable, even if it makes, meaning making ourselves, unpopular. Our job is never easy because drug criminals are ingenious. They work every day to plot a new and better way to steal our children's lives, as they've done by developing this new drug, crack. For every door that we close, they open a new door to death. They prosper on our unwillingness to act. So we must be smarter and stronger and tougher than they are. It's up to us to change attitudes and just simply dry up their markets. And finally, to young people watching or listening, I have a very personal message for you. There's a big, wonderful world out there for you. It belongs to you. It's exciting and stimulating and rewarding. Don't cheat yourselves out of this promise. Our country needs you, but it needs you to be clear-eyed and clear-minded. I recently read one teenager's story. She's now determined to stay clean, but was once strung out on several drugs. What she remembered most clearly about her recovery was that during the time she was on drugs, everything appeared to her in shades of black and gray. And after her treatment, she was able to see color. So to my young friends out there, life can be great, but not when you can't see it. So open your eyes to life, to see it in the vivid colors that God gave us as a precious gift to his children, to enjoy life to the fullest, and to make it count. Say yes to your life, and when it comes to drugs and alcohol, just say no.
That, of course, was Nancy Reagan in 1986. Here in the U.S., we've come a long way since Nancy Reagan's Just Say No. Here's a recent PSA from the state of South Dakota's Department of Social Services and their meth prevention and awareness campaign.
I'm on meth.
So am I.
Meth is not someone else's problem. It's everyone in South Dakota's problem, and we need everyone to get on it.
I'm on meth.
You're listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Friends of mine at the Rights Reporter Foundation in Hungary have a project called Drug Reporter. They're civil and human rights activists based in Hungary. They've been recording and producing videos for years now on drug policy, human rights, and harm reduction. So here is my friend Peter Sorosi with the Rights Reporter Foundation and Drug Reporter with 5 reasons why we cannot make a drug-free world.
A drug-free world, we can do it. This was the slogan of the United Nations Drug Summit in 1998, where governments adopted an action plan to eliminate or significantly reduce drug use and drug trafficking. Many world leaders still believe that they can get rid of drugs once and for all, but history teaches us another lesson. In this video, we will present you 5 arguments why the pursuit of a drug-free world is not only an utter failure, but a harmful experience for humankind. First, drug prohibition simply doesn't work. Although it is estimated that $100 billion are spent on drug law enforcement every year, we could not eliminate or even significantly reduce drug use and drug trafficking. According to an explanation given by the experts of the London School of Economics, in a world with constant demand for drugs, the harder you try to suppress the supply, the more lucrative you make the market for criminals. Second, drug prohibition creates a huge black market, the size of which is estimated to be $300 billion every year. This is the single largest illicit market on earth, enriching criminal organizations that are responsible for growing violence across the world. In Mexico, for example, where the government declared a war on drugs in 2006, tens of thousands of innocent people were killed. In some Central American countries, where the murder rate is the highest on earth, illicit drug trafficking is a major factor behind violence. Money generated by illicit drug trafficking is laundered by big banks, increasing inflation and weakening economies. Third, the global war on drugs undermines development and fuels civil wars. Warlords, insurrectionists and terrorist groups are funded by illicit opiate production in Afghanistan and Myanmar. Guerrillas and paramilitary groups profit from illicit cocaine production in Latin America. Cocaine is often smuggled to Europe through West Africa, where poor countries are turned into narco states. Aggressive eradication campaigns could not eliminate drug cultivation in producer countries, but they take away the livelihood of farmers and contribute to deforestation and pollution. Fourth, the global war on drugs leads to human rights violations. 1,000 people are executed every year for drug-related charges in the world. 500,000 people are detained in so-called rehabilitation centers in Southeast Asia, where they are often abused in the name of treatment. The war on drugs fuels mass incarceration in many countries. For example, the United States has 5% of the global population, but 25% of the global prison population. Negative consequences always fall the heaviest on minorities. Afro-American men in the US are sent to prison for drug charges 13 times the rate of white men. Fifth, criminalization and repression threatens public health and pushes people who use drugs to take more risks. The black market generates ever more potent and risky substances, often cut with contaminants, encouraging high-risk behaviors in unsupervised and unhygienic environments. As a result, Americans are now more likely to die of a drug overdose than in a car accident. Outside of sub-Saharan Africa, the sharing of injecting equipment accounts for one-third of new HIV infections. Criminalization undermines efforts to stop the epidemic. Some people think the idea of a drug-free world is a nice dream like world peace, but they are wrong. This dream turned to be a nightmare. The leaders of the world must quit their dangerous dependence on repression. But what are the alternatives? We will explore them in the next episodes of the Just Say No series. Please share this video with your friends. Stay with us, follow us on Twitter, and like us on Facebook.
That's Peter Cerosi with Drug Reporter and the Rights Reporter Foundation. Here's Peter Cerosi once again explaining harm reduction.
Harm reduction is not only applicable to drugs, but to several other activities involving high risk. For example, it's also harm reduction when you drive a car and you fasten your seatbelt, or when you ride a bicycle and you wear a helmet. Similarly, you can provide people who use drugs with sterile needles and syringes to prevent bloodborne infections such as hepatitis C or HIV. This is called needle exchange. Or you can prescribe opioid medications such as methadone or even diacetylmorphine, which is the medical form of heroin, to heroin-dependent people to prevent them from buying dangerous drugs in the black market. This is called opiate substitution treatment, and it is not only effective in improving the health and well-being of patients, but also in reducing crime. We can train people how to use naloxone, an antidote that can reverse the effects of heroin overdose, to save lives. We can test illegal drugs for adulterants to prevent accidental poisoning. This is called drug checking service. We can create hygienic and safer environments where people can use their own drugs with sterile equipment under medical supervision, so we can prevent overdoses and infections. This is called drug consumption room. Harm reduction can not only reduce the negative consequences of drug use itself, but also the harms of repressive drug policies. It's also harm reduction when we mobilize the communities of vulnerable drug users and empower them to fight for their rights. Harm reduction is often contrasted with abstinence and recovery, but that's not true, they are not opposites. For some people, abstinence might be the only right choice, but other people may not be ready or they don't want to quit drug use. Most people who use drugs are not dependent, and dependence is often associated with childhood trauma, social marginalization, and poverty. When you ask a person who lives on the street to quit drug use, it's like asking someone to go to the storm without an umbrella or remove his hat in the desert. Harm reduction is also essential for long-time recovery. These programs reach out drug users on the street. They serve as the first step to other services. Therefore, they need to be part of an integrated drug treatment system. Harm reduction as a philosophy is based on compassionate pragmatism. This means that we would like to help people where they are at, as fellow citizens in need of help, treating them with respect without shaming or judging them. Countries that moved away from repressive drug policies and provide a wide access to harm reduction programs to drug users could significantly reduce deaths and suffering related to drugs.
That was the voice of Peter Cerosi with the Rights Reporter Foundation. The audio is from videos they have posted at YouTube and on their website at drugreporter.net. And on that note, that's it. Thank you for joining us. You have been listening to Free Culture Radio. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Thank you to everyone out there who's fighting for civil rights, human rights, and social justice. A big thank you to our engineer. And of course, thanks especially to you, dear listener, for your support. You make it all worth it. Free Culture Radio has a webpage at kboo.fm/freeculture. Free Culture Radio also has a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/kboofreecultureradio. Please give it a like. You'll find links there to past shows, announcements about upcoming programs and events, and other stuff like news items that may be of interest. And you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Doug McVeigh. We'll be back in a month to continue our examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the influence of drugs on society. Thanks again for listening. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long!